Welcome in. This is the FPC Chiefs podcast. I'm Braden Holacek, the managing editor and writer for Full Press Coverage Chiefs of fullpresscoverage.com. It is a cold Friday here in February. Again, just settling into the off season. We got a few different topics to cover today. Eric Bieniemy, the news surrounding him and possibly going to coach at his alma mater of Colorado. We'll talk about that a little bit to begin things, and then we will obviously talk about the latest articles and what's going on over at Full Press Coverage Chiefs. We got a lot of draft profiles out so far this week. Should be able to get more out on the weekend, Friday through Sunday, maybe even going into Monday. So again, we're going to just try to get a lot of draft profiles out over the course of the offseason and the lead up to April's draft. So, and we'll see what else we kind of think of today to talk about. There's definitely a lot of upcoming decisions, not just for the Chiefs, but around the NFL. I guess I'll touch on one move real quick this morning. Washington Redskins have released cornerback Josh Norman, a guy who had a pretty stellar couple of years with the Carolina Panthers. April 2016, signed a five-year deal worth, I believe it was like $75 million. He had 1 year left on his deal, but the Redskins have decided to release him. His play has deteriorated quite a bit. I know he was a guy that kind of last offseason going into 2019, he was an option that I think some Chiefs fans wanted the team to look into possibly trading for. Obviously, they did not. And some of that's due to obviously his play deteriorating. But I don't think Norman would be a good fit in the Chiefs defense anyways. What they typically look for is longer cornerbacks, you know, guys with some underrated speed. I don't think Norman really has much speed left. And also, I think he, you know, thrives a little bit more in cover two. And the Chiefs, if they don't run man coverage, usually run primarily a cover three scheme. So real quick move this morning there to kind of just touch on. I know there's going to be a lot of guys that, you know, will get cut that, you know, it seems like I know the Chiefs aren't the only fan base. You know, the Patriots are one of them. There's others out there. Whoever gets cut, it's like, you know, every fan base thinks their team should sign that guy. But I don't think the Chiefs should try to look into adding Josh Norman. I think Norman's a guy who would at best probably be the third best corner on your team at this point, just given where he is right now, you know, how much he is kind of given to the Washington Redskins over the last few years. It's just been a tough downhill, you know, fall for Norman there. But good for Washington. They save quite a bit of money on the salary cap there, $12.5 million. And, you know, Norman now will look for a new home. So real quick move this morning on this Friday came out just a little bit before I started recording this. But yeah, definitely a lot of guys are going to be cut here in the next, you know, few weeks as we get closer and closer to NFL free agency becoming official. I think we got about a month left until free agency begins, which is kind of crazy to say. You know, guys will be signing soon for new teams going into 2020 already within the course of the next 4 or 5 weeks. And obviously a lot of important offseason dates coming up soon as well. The franchise tag, the time to decide to place the franchise tag starts on February 25th, so we're just a little over a week from that. There's always big names every year that are considered, so it's going to be interesting to see as we inch closer to that what other news and rumors come out about certain players there. But yeah, kind of moving back to the Chiefs side of things, the Colorado Buffaloes in the Pac-12 had their former head coach, Mel Tucker, who was only there like a couple of years anyway. He left, which I think Colorado fired him, or at least, you know, they agreed to part ways, if I remember right, near the end of the 2019 season. Mel Tucker has now become the new head coach at Michigan State. So there's been a lot of rumors there with Eric Bieniemy being a former player at Colorado. The team could be reaching out to him to possibly sway him to become the new head coach there in Boulder. As far as we've seen right now, based off the reports, I mean, the Buffaloes have reached out to Bieniemy. Right now, there's nothing really imminent. Bieniemy's kind of doing his due diligence, though, kind of testing, you know, what the situation would be like if he were to take the Colorado job. The thing that's so difficult for him in that decision there is just, you know, for college coaches, you know, signing day is already coming on for the recruiting process for new players. And you know, I don't know how many assistants you would be able to retain from the previous staff this late in the game. There's just a lot of, you know, decisions that you would need to make for your personnel right away. And at this point in the offseason of college football, it's just so late that I don't think that would help sway Bieniemy anymore. Personally, I don't think Bieniemy is going to take the job. For one, I think you look at him, he's still only 50 years old right now, which is young for coaching now, and he'll turn 51 in August. I know he's been a head coaching candidate. He's interviewed the last couple of off seasons for jobs. Still hasn't gotten one, which has been really surprising to me because I think he's a really good players coach, a great leader, kind of like Andy Reid, you know, soft-spoken, but, you know, kind of puts the players up on a pedestal and makes it all about the players. And so, you know, I do think Bieniemy will be an NFL head coach one day. I really think he's going to get a good chance this next offseason after 2020. Again, people don't realize how much of the play calling he actually is invested in with the Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of people think it's only Andy Reid calling the plays, but Andy, you know, does a good job with all of his assistants and giving them opportunities to show what they can do. Bieniemy's called a lot of plays over the last couple years as the offensive coordinator, you know, after taking over for Matt Nagy when he left to take the Chicago Bears job. You know, Bieniemy got the offensive coordinator role, moving on from running backs coach, and he's done a splendid job. So I do think he'll be an NFL head coach one day. So, you know, I think just even if he would like to, you know, go back to his alma mater and, you know, if Colorado really feels like they're close to having a winning culture, maybe Bieniemy will feel inclined to take the job. But I just think when you go to a place in college football, especially as your alma mater, more than anything, I think you're kind of stuck there for 3 years. I think you just look at what opportunities could present him over the next 3 years at the NFL level, I think could be even greater. Not that college coaching is a bad thing. I think you look at certain guys that have gone back to college coaching over the years, Herm Edwards with Arizona State now, Lovie Smith at Illinois. There's guys that really enjoy college coaching, but I do think Bieniemy is fit for the NFL, and I think he's going to get a really good chance this next year. So, again, just kind of looking at Eric Bieniemy's resume, again, he played running back at Colorado late 80s, and then his last season there was in 1990. He was actually the nation's leading rusher with the Buffaloes in 1990 with 1,628 yards, 17 touchdowns that year. He finished third in the Heisman Trophy voting that season, and he is still Colorado's all-time leader in rushing yards, all-purpose yards, and touchdowns. So, you know, had a great career there, was drafted by the Chargers, 39th overall in the 1991 NFL draft. So he was with the Chargers 91 to 94, then moved on to the Cincinnati Bengals 95 to 98, and finished up his playing career with the Eagles in 99. So played 9 seasons in the NFL. He's actually gone back to Colorado to coach twice. He was a running backs coach there, 2001 and 2002, and then later went back to Colorado, 2011 to 2012 as the offensive coordinator. So he does have some experience on the coaching staff at different times with Colorado. He's never been, obviously, a college head coach in the college ranks. He's only been running backs coach or offensive coordinator, same at the NFL level. So besides the Chiefs, 2013 to the present, he's only been with the Minnesota Vikings as their running backs coach, 2006 to 2010. So he's been at the NFL level for all but 2 years over the past 14 or 15 seasons. So I think that will also kind of maybe make him maybe feel like he will want to stay in the NFL as well. So again, he's coached at Colorado a couple times already before, just not the head coach. I just think when you look at him, I think he's a guy that, again, he's going to get, a lot of opportunities in the NFL soon. I was just talking to somebody the other day. I really feel like a team like the Atlanta Falcons after 2020 could be a very good fit for Eric Bieniemy if they decide to move on from Dan Quinn, because they've really had a lot, or, you know, a couple few really rough seasons after losing Super Bowl 51, blowing the 28-3 lead against the New England Patriots. So, you know, Eric Bieniemy, I do think there's a lot of opportunities that will present himself. Again, I just think there are certain guys that are made for college coaching. Certain guys are made for NFL coaching. And I think that, you know, with Eric Bieniemy, you know, I just think if you go back to a place, especially where it's your alma mater, I think you're going to maybe be there in a situation longer than what you could be stuck for in a better situation in the future. So it's really interesting situation. Again, I think a lot of people right now feel like Bieniemy is probably not going to take the job. I know there's some other candidates out there in the college ranks, mostly defensive coordinators, a couple from the Pac-12, I think Oregon's defensive coordinators being considered for the job. So it's not like Colorado's, you know, really set on getting Bieniemy only. They have some other options out there, but yeah, just really interesting seeing that report kind of come out just really suddenly over the last couple of days because of Mel Tucker going to Michigan State to take that job at the college rank. So I really think Bieniemy will stay with Kansas City moving forward. So now we'll kind of move on again, kind of talking about our latest article topics over this last few days since our last episode. So we had four draft profiles come out over the last 2 days. Again, I'm a big fan of the NFL draft, you know, following it and just covering it a little bit more. Over the last couple few years, it's been really fun to see how much things change over the last couple years in the draft. You know, certain type of positions that have gone, you know, much more early. The talent in this year's NFL draft is certainly one of the, you know, on paper, one of the best talent pools in a long time in the NFL draft. So over the last couple of days, we had four draft profiles come out. So the first one was the first linebacker profile that I did this draft run-up to April. So we talked about Kenneth Murray, the Oklahoma linebacker. He's a guy that I think about a month or two ago, probably a couple months ago, he probably would have been the second linebacker taken after Isaiah Simmons, and really the first primary linebacker, because you can play Clemson's Isaiah Simmons in a lot of different positions, a lot of different roles. But now I think Patrick Queen is considered probably a little bit higher right now on the board than Kenneth Murray. And we'll talk about Patrick Queen actually in a minute, because he's another draft profile that we wrote here over the last couple of days. But with Kenneth Murray, I was really impressed because his 2018 film, he just looked a little bit slower. So it was really encouraging to see how much quicker and, you know, much more determined and sure of himself he was with his assignments in 2019. Oklahoma still struggled a little bit in the, you know, hot and heavy offensive style of the Big 12. But Kenneth Murray still had a lot of big games this year. I think you look at him, he's a guy that what I wrote about is tackling, you know, tackle attempts look like car crashes just because it doesn't always look pretty, but he gets the job done. There's a lot of plays, especially against Baylor, both in the conference championship game in the regular season game this year, this past year, he, you know, was grabbing, coming in, and he usually, if a guy is short, you know, a ball carrier or a quarterback shorter, he'll usually kind of get his hands on them around the shoulders. You know, he does a good job of wrapping up, you know, and getting low, but there's a lot of plays. I think especially with just RPO type of offenses in the college game where he's just coming in so high. So he does a good job of tackling. He's a pretty consistent tackler, very effective. Not afraid, though, like I said, to use his upper body to bring down defenders. He does have some range. I think he's a sideline-to-sideline defender. Probably not as great as Patrick Queen of LSU, which we'll talk about again in a minute. But blockers just have such a difficult time slowing him down out in space. His speed jumps off the page, which is pretty impressive given his size. You know, he's a guy that sometimes the speed works to his advantage, but sometimes it can hurt him just because sometimes he'll take too many steps in short areas. And I think, you know, running backs are able to cut back on him pretty easily into the middle of the field. But again, he's a guy that his sideline to sideline mobility is really impressive. He's able to catch a lot of running backs and quarterbacks from behind. That's what showed up on his tape quite a bit, especially in the game against Texas this past year. Sam Ellinger really felt the effects of Kenneth Murray throughout that game. But yeah, he's strictly, I think, a pretty juice defender, meaning, you know, he moves at a rapid pace pretty often. He's a guy that, you know, he'll just simply miss some tackles because sometimes he runs too far up the field or, you know, simply just runs right beside you and sometimes is a little bit, you know, confused, gets his wires crossed a little bit for anticipation. So he's always going 100 miles an hour, which I think is not honestly a bad thing if the Chiefs were to add him to their linebacking core, just because I think he would mix really well with Anthony Hitchens, and that's something we'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, I mean, he's got good coverage ability too. I was actually pretty impressed here just because I didn't expect a lot from his coverage ability, but being in the Big 12, obviously he's faced a lot of pass coverage reps before. You know, he does a good job, I think, on swing routes and screen passes with running backs, times that up pretty well. If there's any plays where he's not going 100 miles per hour as much, it's probably on those plays just because he's very smart about knowing when to time his break on the football or break on the running back. He does have some reps where he's gone against inside receivers or tight ends. His coverage down the field is definitely going to take some development. Again, the range is there, but it's not as strong maybe as some other linebackers in this class. I think, you know, he's able to play zone coverage pretty well, I think, because he has a lot of anticipation. And again, he's really smart to know when to break on a certain route and flip his hips and close down on the receiver. So Kenneth Murray's a guy I wrote, you know, his Chiefs fit. I think, again, he would mix really well with Anthony Hitchens just because a little bit faster than Anthony Hitchens, has maybe a teensy bit more range. And I think also, you know, what was really interesting, besides his consistency in tackling, shooting the gaps, and even in coverage, Oklahoma did put him on the edge a few times as well whenever he blitzed. So if he's a blitzing backer, I think he'll thrive really well in a Steve Spagnuolo defense in the middle there. Certainly has the capabilities of being a three-down defender in the NFL. Again, with the Chiefs' upcoming offseason priorities, you got Reggie Ragland and Darren Lee, our two linebacker free agents. So I would not be surprised if both of them do not return, especially Darren Lee, you know, who strictly was special teams in, you know, the last three quarters of the season. So linebacker is probably, to me, one of the top three needs of the Chiefs going into, you know, the combine as of this moment. So if it's not their top need, which I don't think it is, I think it's definitely one of the top three. So Kenneth Murray was the first linebacker profile there that we had come out. And then yesterday on Thursday, I guess I'll just stick with the linebackers here. We talked about Patrick Queen. He's a guy who probably would have been maybe at best late second round pick, maybe a third round pick. But over the last couple of months of the season, really, really grew his stock just because he was making a lot of plays, a lot of big tackles in big games. I mean, obviously the SEC conference games, there's a lot of big games every week for LSU, but just his performance in the college football playoff really, really, I think, generated a lot of attention his way from NFL teams, and he shot up the draft boards. I think a lot of people that have done a lot of mock drafts already, I've kind of read, think he could go as high as 19th or 20th overall in the first round, possibly, maybe to the Raiders or the Jaguars. If he falls a little bit, though, to the Chiefs, I think the Chiefs would be getting a guy that would definitely be a thumping linebacker in the middle. Not really a thumper when you think of big hits, but I think just a consistent guy that is going to make tackles, is able to shoot the gaps, and blow up a lot of plays in the backfield. You look at Patrick Queen's tape, whether it was creating a sack, just creating a tackle on the running back, or forcing the running back to block him in pass protection. He just created a lot of havoc in the backfield. The game against Texas really sticks out early 2019 season. There was a play, I believe, where he came in on an inside blitz, and the running back was forced to block him. Sam Ellinger was really feeling the pressure, and then LSU defensive end Taylor Von Jason made the sack. So Patrick Queen's a guy that, just him alone, he creates a lot of havoc in the backfield or out on the flats. He's a guy that, I think when you see a lot of game tackles, he's primarily the first guy to get his hat to the football. So he's always around the football, which is pretty huge for a linebacker. A lot of linebackers in the NFL nowadays, there's just always such a liability with so many guys being able to, get picked on quite a bit. I think Queen's the guy, obviously a little bit smaller than Kenneth Murray of Oklahoma, but again, very consistent tackler. He has the length and explosiveness to make stops when you think he has no chance to get it done. Another thing I kind of wrote about with him is the ability to take on blocks. He slips off of blocks pretty well, and kind of like with his tackling, he's never going to surprise you with the biggest hit or biggest pop on blockers, but the way he uses his hands and his feet to help put blockers in spin cycles is pretty impressive. And he's just very slippery. Again, going through gaps or getting off of blocks, very slippery guy that you just can't contain enough when you're trying to move the football down the field. So this guy has a lot of range, I think even more sideline to sideline range than what Kenneth Murray probably presents. Not that Murray doesn't present any. I think it's just Queen is so fast and agile that, going sideline to sideline is just so easy for him. And his effort is off the charts in that area, being able to go from one end of the field to the other. He does have a lot of impressive traits as a coverage linebacker as well. Again, the range goes into that factor, but he really showed a lot of great reps against running backs or receivers on the outside. There was a couple plays against Florida in 2019, especially when Florida was inside the LSU 10, where Patrick Queen was covering a running back there on kind of a fade route slash a little bit of a wheel route. And he almost came up with an interception against Florida. Unfortunately for him, the ball deflected right off his hands into the Florida receivers for a touchdown. But he was really impressive to see how well he sees the routes, sets himself up for landmarks and coverage spacing to be able to break on the football. And again, the anticipation for him is off the charts. I mean, there's not a lot of throws in the middle of the field unless you can put the ball right over his head. There's not a lot of throws in the middle of the field that are going to be completed in tight windows against a linebacker like Patrick Queen. So, again, he's done well, I think, both in man coverage, in zone coverage. Has not had a lot of reps in man coverage, but I think, again, he would fit in pretty well with the Steve Spagnuolo defense in Kansas City, just because with Kansas City, you can kind of afford to have a lot of hybrid guys in the middle part of that defense, and guys that are able to, you know, show off their speed. Even if they're a little smaller, I think it works really well in the Steve Spagnuolo defense. You know, it's going to be a guy that if the Chiefs were to get him, you're going to see him flying around the field quite a bit, because I don't think the Steve Spagnuolo would really put him on a lot of limits. So this guy's just a playmaker. I mean, probably my favorite draft riser, as far as just a guy that, you know, his stock's gone up and just you see the plays he makes, the consistency, you know, very confident guy. I think Patrick Queen would look pretty good in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform. As far as the other two draft profiles we had come out later part of this week, Lloyd Cushenberry III, interior offensive lineman, and another LSU guy. You know, I'm still kind of learning how to watch offensive lineman tape. You know, compared to other players, it's a little bit more difficult just because, I mean, obviously, if you're just watching games, you know, all you see is a guy either makes a block or he misses a block. I think when you look at offensive linemen, especially guys from the interior part of the offensive line, there's a lot, though, to pay attention to right off the snap of the ball. And for Lloyd Cushenberry III, he's a pretty big guy, has a lot of length, which is not that common for centers and interior offensive linemen to have the length in his arms and the wingspan that he does. So this helps create a lot of leverage for him. You know, I think the biggest part of his game is his athleticism and his flexibility. His footwork is really impressive. There's times where he resets really quickly with his feet to slow down blockers. You know, really works defensive linemen to the outside, to the sidelines. So there's a lot of reps that to me, when I watched Lloyd Cushenberry III, especially in 2019 when LSU had probably their most productive offensive season ever, there's a lot of reps where I think he'll just kind of surprise you because, you know, he's kind of slow to start right off the snap and right off the ball, and then all of a sudden he'll throw a punch, you know, with his hands at a defensive lineman up high to get the block on. And sometimes I think the defensive linemen are a little stunned by that just because they're not expecting him to use his punches the way he does to block the defenders. They're really quick jabs more than anything. His hand usage, I think, will take some work. You know, what I've kind of learned about watching the offensive lineman, I think the hand usage will still take a little bit of work. Sometimes he's too top heavy and can slip off of blocks. But he does good to not get too grabby, which is important for a lot of offensive linemen coming into the NFL. So offensive line, I'm still kind of learning how to watch them a little bit better than I used to know how to do. But I think I've come a long way. And again, Lloyd Cushenberry III, kind of like Patrick Queen, a draft riser over the last few months, had a good Senior Bowl week of practices. You know, a guy that I think could play both center or guard in the NFL. And the Chiefs fit there. I mean, I really think Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is a very likely cut candidate just because of salary cap implications. I think the Chiefs are going to try to save some money from cutting him. And obviously, Duvernay-Tardif, I think, has played deteriorated a little bit this past year as well. A lot of people may not notice it because he's an offensive lineman on the inside. But the interior really, really at times struggled this season. I think Duvernay-Tardif has kind of just, you know, become worn down at this point a little bit more than what we used to know from him over the last few years. So we'll take a quick break here, a real short break, and then we'll come back to talk about the fourth and final draft profile that's come out over the last couple of days. All right, welcome back. This is the FBC Chiefs podcast. I'm Braden Holacek, the managing editor and writer for Full Press Coverage, Chiefs of FullPressCoverage.com. Again, a Friday here. It is the end of the second week of February. So again, we're inching closer and closer to free agency and the draft, slowly but surely. So again, we just, so far in this episode, we talked a little bit about Eric Bieniemy and his situation, possibly head coach at Colorado, who knows? Right now, I don't think he will take the job. We've talked about some of the latest article pieces as well, mostly draft profiles since the last episode. So we have one more to talk about here. And it's difficult with the draft prospect profiles talking about running backs because especially seeing some other rumors about the upcoming offseason move, you know, with guys like Todd Gurley of the Rams and David Johnson of the Cardinals. These were guys that you could have probably said were the, you know, two of the five or six best running backs in the league. They both got signed to big deals, and now they're both looking, their teams are looking to trade them. So, you know, with the Rams, I think it's also a little bit more of a different situation. It's not just Gurley, the player he was before he signed the extension. I think it's just also they're trying to sell tickets in a new market in Los Angeles where, you know, the Rams may not have a ton of regional fans anyway. But again, I mean, he was putting up numbers, I think, about 17, 18 touchdowns total. You know, you're talking about almost 140 scrimmage yards on average per game, or at least 130 before he signed this deal. David Johnson was, you know, I think averaging almost 100, 110 rushing yards per game before his extension. So I think it just goes to show a lot of people, a lot of teams are obviously realizing, if they didn't before, that paying running backs a large chunk of change is just not necessary. I mean, there's certain guys like Ezekiel Elliott, like Derrick Henry, that I think warrant that kind of money a little bit, but paying running backs, it's just not a necessity. So that's the tough thing doing these draft profiles with the running backs, because there's a lot of guys I like on tape that I think, oh my gosh, they'd really thrive in an offense like Andy Reid's in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and the weapons. But I really don't think the Chiefs would take a running back first round. There's been a lot of mock drafts that had the Chiefs taking a running back in the first round. I just don't think the Chiefs would, kind of knowing their archetype. You know, whether it's John Dorsey as GM or since Brett Veach has become the GM, they've mostly taken running backs in the mid to late rounds. I mean, Darwin Thompson last year was a sixth round pick. Kareem Hunt, when he was still with the team, he was selected by John Dorsey. The last draft where Dorsey was the GM, he was a third round pick. And I almost hate to say it because Kareem Hunt was a big part of this team. And obviously there was a lot of, you know, bad stuff with the situation there. You know, obviously wish that situation wouldn't have happened and he wouldn't have got released, but in a way, you know, the Chiefs may have given him an extension possibly, especially if John Dorsey was still the GM going forward, they may have overpaid for him. So in a way, you know, again, I really wish that situation wouldn't have happened and he still would have been on the Chiefs team right now, but I just can't imagine overpaying running backs in today's age, especially when you look at where the Chiefs kind of were going to when those rumors were starting to come out about Kareem Hunt possible extension in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes becoming the starting quarterback. So again, I'll talk about our first running back draft profile again here in a minute, but I just can't imagine the Chiefs really thinking that running back is a huge priority as much as some draft people are making it out to be when you got a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes. And I think really Damian Williams is a guy not only do they like, but he just fits in so well with the offense. I think the biggest thing as far as the Chiefs roster the way it is now, the biggest need for a running back, I think, is just because LeSean McCoy, I don't anticipate him coming back next season. And you really only have two guys right now, Damian Williams and Darwin Thompson, that I think are really secured on the roster in 2020. I do think Darrell Williams is a good back. I think there's a lot of things to like about him in the Chiefs offense. But I don't want to say that I would guarantee he'd be back next year just because I know he tweeted out some things, you know, after he was put on injured reserve, he felt like he was ready to go for the playoffs, for the Super Bowl. Not that the Chiefs are thinking he couldn't have played, but I think it just put a bad taste in Darrell Williams' mouth. So I really think Damian Williams and Darwin Thompson are the only two guys that will for sure be there in 2020. So running back's a need, and there's a lot of guys that I like that they could probably take early. I just don't know if they will. But, I mean, we gotta write about the profiles because they could be possible Chiefs targets. So the first running back draft profile I did was Ohio State's J.K. Dobbins. He's probably, to me right now, personally, the first or second best running back in this draft class. If he's not number one, I would probably put him number two behind Georgia's DeAndre Swift, another guy we'll write about soon. I'm a big fan of LSU's Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Florida State's Cam Akers, but I do think Dobbins and Swift are one and two. It's just, you know, which one is number one, which one is number two. So for me, J.K. Dobbins, he's a guy that I guess the biggest thing I'll say about him first before we get into his trades, I think he would really thrive in the Andy Reid screen pass game. There's not a lot of teams that run screen passes better than the Chiefs. The Eagles do a pretty good job of it. The Saints to a degree, but the Chiefs do it almost as good as anybody. And I really think that was an area that J.K. Dobbins really improved on in 2019 compared to 2018, is he got natural soft hands out of the backfield, a reliable target. And it's not like he was just running swing pass routes at Ohio State. There was actually times where he was running wheel routes, but there was times where he didn't really get a lot of chances there just because Justin Fields, the Ohio State quarterback, did not throw the ball to him a lot. He settled for crossing routes in that situation a lot of the times, but does a good job to get his eyes upfield right away and slip opposing defenders. There is the occasional drops with Dobbins, but not a lot. So the pass catching to me was really impressive. Made a big improvement there from where he was in 2018. But his feet and change of direction skills, he's not really a jitterbug type of running back, but he's very smooth. Will cut back on you pretty quickly. You know, he's almost gliding in the open field with his long strides. So very smooth feet. And what really impressed me about his vision, you see a lot of running backs at the college level just dance too much, you know, look for that big play every time. He's a guy that, you know, strictly just once he sees a lane or once he sees an opening, he simply takes it. I mean, he's a guy that simply just runs downhill and he bursts straight ahead. Very decisive runner. I mean, not a guy that's going to dance a lot, a very determined downhill runner. And, his speed, I think, is underrated. His longer speed's not something that's going to impress you, you know, compared to other guys in this class or other guys even in the NFL. You know, he is able to be caught from behind on long runs, but, his short area quickness, still very impressive. So J.K. Dobbins, to me, if he's not the best running back in this class, personally, he's probably number two. Again, the Chiefs fit. I just don't anticipate LeSean McCoy coming back. Who knows right now on Darrell Williams? Darwin Thompson provides a lot of potential. Damian Williams fits so well in the offense, but I think J.K. Dobbins would kind of fit the same mold that Damian Williams would in this offense. And he's a difficult guy to bring down, but again, I think just having that decisiveness, the downhill running ability, you pair that with a zone blocking scheme like Kansas City on running plays, I think he would fit really well. So J.K. Dobbins, again, I was really, really enjoyed watching his tape just because there's something about running backs, I guess, in college football that just really impressed me. You know, it's a stat-padded, league in college football, you know, especially for running backs. But I think J.K. Dobbins is a guy that to me, could be taken pretty early. I don't know if he'll for sure be taken by the Chiefs, but again, he's a possible Chiefs target. I think, to me, the best running back in the class. As of this moment, I would put him just ahead of Georgia's DeAndre Swift. So, that'll probably wrap it up for today's episode. Again, we're going to be coming out with a lot more draft profiles here over the weekend. I know The next three that I have in mind, I guess, sticking with the running backs, Georgia's DeAndre Swift's a guy that I'm hoping to write about soon. TCU cornerback Jeff Gladney, another guy that I really, really like. Maybe my biggest draft crush going into the 2020 draft as of now. Hoping to get his draft profile done soon, and then we'll hit the interior offensive line category again as well with Michigan's Cesar Ruiz. He's a guy that I think, kind of like Lloyd Cushenberry, a guy that his stock has gone way up since the end of the season due to his performance in big games like Ohio State. So, Michigan guy that I'm hoping to write about very soon. Again, just stay tuned to Full Press Coverage, Full Press Coverage Chiefs. You guys can follow me on Twitter at eBearcat9. Again, besides draft profile pieces, we'll have some off-season topics coming up soon. Again, I'm hoping to continue the Unsung Super Bowl Hero series very soon. Again, at least three more guys that I want to write about. I know Alex Okafor is a guy that I'm hoping to mention probably next. We've wrote about Emmanuel Ogba earlier this week on Tuesday. That came out, so go check that out if you have not already. And we wrote about Matt Moore the week before for his performance when he stepped in for Patrick Mahomes during that midseason injury. So at least three more guys that I'm hoping to write about. Alex Okafor's one. We'll kind of see what other guys I can come up with. And I'm hoping, if not early next week, by middle of next week for sure, there's a Sammy Watkins piece that I want to really, really touch on, how he could be remembered, even if the Chiefs do cut him this offseason, which I think they will do. So stay tuned to all that. Again, Full Press Coverage Chiefs, fullpresscoverage.com, and I will see you guys next time.